Welcome to the About Sex podcast, where we discuss
oil changes.
Well, some automotive repair. But
not well, we do at least talk about lubricants.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
WD-40.
Gazinga.
Gazinga. You're crazy. My name is Josh, and with me, as always, is my lovely wife, Angela Skirtu. Tell us who you are, Angela.
I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and an ASEX certified sex therapist. And today our guest is Kendra Holliday, the co-host, or no, not the co-host, the co-founder of Sex Positive St. Louis. Sorry, I flubbed that.
Maybe we should just start over.
No, we don't. We're going to be fine. Welcome to the show. So tell us about yourself, Kendra.
I live in St. Louis and I am co-founder of Sex Positive St. Louis, which was created in 2010, so we're going on our eighth year, and
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
That's cool. What is Sex Positive St. Louis for people who don't know?
Sex Positive St. Louis is an organization. It's a not-for-profit. It's kind of my volunteer arm because my big passion is sexuality, and my co-founders recognized that we live in such a sex-negative society, and oftentimes sex has had a lot of fear and misinformation attached to it, or people don't want to even talk about it at all. So we wanted to create a safe space in the Midwest for people to have open, honest conversations and be able to explore their sexuality on their own terms and in all kinds of fun and creative ways. We will host a lot of different events. Some of them are very educational and some are more entertaining. I didn't read the details of this yet. My co-leader, David Wraith, just introduced this new event, and it's April Tools Day.
What's April and Tools Day?
I think it's a clothing optional party coming up in in April. but we did not have St. Fat Pricks Day.
No,
we
you did
do
not
that
have St.
Usually, St. Fat Pricks is our clothing optional St. Patrick's Day.
That seems like
Day.
A pun, I think.
So, yeah, so we try to get, we like our themes.
And so it's www.sexpositivestlouis.org
it's just
or com? Or?
It's sexstl.com.
Sexstl.com.
Okay, sexstl.com. Just in case people want to find it.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, our bios are on there, and one thing that is really nice, we have a calendar of events, so we put our own events on there, but we also will include any sex-positive events in the St. Louis area for people to learn about, and we will do some recaps of some of our events for people who couldn't attend, so they can get dating safety tips or learn about some of the educators that we've had come into St. Louis, etc.
Okay. Cool.
And awesome. Which I really love the group. I often encourage some of my clients to go see it because just like you said, we have all these images of what makes sex bad, but we don't have enough images of like what makes sex positive and healthy and how can we be better people to each other and stuff.
Yes, definitely.
So awesome. Anyhow, why don't you ask about some of the things she suggests?
Yeah, apparently you were in London recently. Yeah. Top of the morning to you, right?
Isn't that what the erotica morning.
I don't know, but I do know that in United States, the slang for masturbation is jerk off or get off or something like that.
Or spanky monkey.
I heard that it's toss off.
Toss off. Well, you could toss the cum off. That makes sense. Just toss it a little here, there.
It kind of looks like you're throwing something. Yeah. You're tossing.
So I presented a presentation on my blogging career that has been around since 2005 or so. Yeah. And it was a neat little slideshow showing all the ups and downs that I have endured over the years. And right now I'm in a really good upswing, which is great. And I was at this conference called Eroticon, which is held every year, usually in the London area. And it is meant for people who write about sex. So erotica, journalists, the gamut. And it was a really amazing experience to go over there and immerse myself and do that presentation. I pulled it off.
Awesome. What were some memorable experiences there?
You mean at the conference?
Yeah, at the conference.
I was really curious to see who would come because it was such a new group. A lot of them didn't know who I was, and I'm used to being a local celebrity in St. Louis. People know me here. So I was really trying hard to network because I am an introvert at heart, and I was mm-hmm. trying so hard to make friends, and I didn't really click and bond with anyone in a way, you know, that you keep in touch with. That was, mm-hmm. but I have some new people I'm following on Twitter. They're a big Twitter crowd, and there was some really great other presentations. I think I might be rambling off, but I do want to say that there is this blogger named Remittance Girl, mm-hmm. and she gave the most interesting talk. It was all about transgression and taboo.
Oh, yeah? What does that mean?
Oh, gosh. It is about how in our society, there are things that come and go, like trends. What is transgressive? And right now, she has some different theories on what is going to come out more as a taboo topic. For instance, fantasizing about sexual situations with creepy politicians.
Oh, is that popular now?
That's an example of a transgression because you're taking something that is
supposed to be pure, you twist it.
Yeah. And some of the ones that she has she showcased in her presentation and from the past include vorophilia, where creatures consume each other.
Oh.
So like a snake eating a snake, kind of like cannibalism.
Yeah.
And
sexy?
Incest was another one she mentioned.
That's one that's actually popular in porn right now is incest porn.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Incest porn.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
it's a little too popular.
And well, one taboo topic in our society for sure is child sexuality.
Right.
So we've gotten way out of hand with it, with not even acknowledging that people under age 18 do have a sexuality, mm-hmm. and it should be theirs to have, but instead mm-hmm. we take it away from them mm-hmm. because we don't want to be construed as creepy or inappropriate.
And
it is counterproductive, I think.
It is. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Teenagers have sex. It does happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm aware.
Well, and that's why I've always been a proponent of educating them so they can make the best decisions for themselves. I've always been a proponent for that for any person. You know, I think when people have good information and they have supports, then they tend to make the best decisions in their lives. But mm-hmm. I think sometimes as a society, we just want to, not we as in like us, but
we.
Like, I think as a society, a typical way society tries to manipulate is to control. Like, how do we control people's behaviors? And what's funny is when people are controlled, they almost fight as hard as they to not be controlled.
They will immediately do the opposite of what you tell them to do.
Yeah. We were just talking about this earlier. I was talking about my daughter with the fan. So like, my daughter was next to the fan and I told her, I was like, don't stick your finger in the fan. And literally as soon as I said it, she goes, poke. And I'm like, what the?
And then she cried.
And I'm like, this is why you don't do that. But I understand there's just kind of a human nature to like, maybe the transgressions are, I'm not supposed to do this, so I must do it.
One thing that Remittance Girl did say is that all humans are children.
Mm-hmm.
Even mm-hmm. when we are grown up, we are still the children that we have always been. And that's why we carry around our wounds and still have our needs and need attention and reassurance. And I thought that was a really neat observation for her to make.
We're all kids.
Interesting.
We're all children.
All right. Oh,
yeah. I've definitely met a lot of adults that I say, you know, they definitely act like a child. But the reality is, like, a lot of times the opposite, where people treat children like they're not
humans. People.
They're almost like lesser than people. They can't have sexuality. They can't have opinions. They can't have rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They can't even sue you.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway. Something we were going to talk about today is actually experience versus performance sex. Why don't you explain a little bit about what those two things are?
Yeah, I think that one of my big passions is contrast. I'm really intrigued by contrast. Mm-hmm. And with my field of sexuality, I like to explore that a lot. So when I'm talking about a sex that is more experience-based versus performance-based. What I mean by that is I have male clients that I work with, and they come into a sexual situation using moves and techniques that they saw in porn.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it goes fine and sometimes it doesn't, because porn is a huge performance. It's meant to be entertaining. It's not
it's meant to get people off.
Yeah, it can be educational, but it's not, that's not the main purpose, I don't think.
No,
so when they see these different positions that are for more for camera angles, and they see an erection that is a certain size and it lasts all this time, they get these ideas that if their penis doesn't do exactly that or is not that big, then they really beat themselves up over it and have such hang-ups when it takes them so far away from the actual experience and the skin-on-skin intimacy contact. And they lose track of feeling pleasure and giving pleasure because they're so in their head trying to
perform.
Yeah,
yeah, so, they're too worried about performance to enjoy it.
I try to introduce them to a different approach, which is the experience-based. So it's very much sensate focus, where you're really in the moment, in the present. And when you teach techniques like, when someone is giving touch, it's not just the person receiving the touch that is experiencing things. It's a two-way sort of thing. So as I'm touching someone, I'm also feeling certain things and feeling the body and the hair and the textures. And it's really wonderful to have that open communication as you're experiencing another person's body like it's a new beautiful landscape. And finding out the positions where you can be more skin on skin, full body together, as opposed to these angles and things. And also learning that a penis is a very much like, it's not just this one hard dildo thing. It comes and goes. It has these different feelings to it. And I tried to promote
to them.
Your penis
has feelings.
Yeah. Yes, feelings. They do.
Wait. So can a penis be sad?
A penis can have attachment issues. They can. I say this. It's meant to be a joke, but it really helps a lot of men. There is. I'm just telling I'm telling you this because there's a percentage of men that their penis is not going to be in any sort of working order until they feel safe with somebody and they've built this trust that they're not going to lose them simply because their performance is not perfect. And when they know that that's normal and that it's okay for them to find themselves and find love with somebody, it goes away. Yeah. And so I 100% believe penises can have attachment orders. Or another way of putting it is sometimes your penis is smarter than you are, that you're not meant to be a robot. And he's telling you, I need to wait until I feel loved.
Oh, my penis is definitely a robot, but come on.
I'm a robot.
Well, insert tab A into slot B.
Send. Oh, we're totally messing around.
Uploading erection. Beep.
That's totally been in our sex life once. No, so, totally
so some of our listeners will understand a little bit. You also are a sex surrogate and a relationship coach, right?
Yeah, so, I work with mainly men, but sometimes couples and sometimes women with anything to do with relationships, sexuality, etc. So back to the contrast.
Yeah, the
People say that a hard man is good to find, and I appreciate an erect penis as much as anyone else. But
everyone
I
does.
Also, really want to celebrate the flaccid penis too, because I find it so intriguing that I have a clitoris, and it's like this teeny, 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 teeny phallus. Like it's a teeny penis. And a penis is like really big clit. And I love touching all of that and exploring it. And we're so different, but we're so similar. Just
Oh, yeah.
So fascinating. And so I want to enjoy it regardless of whether it's going into that slot A and B. And
No, but I think a lot of men would really benefit from knowing, and women, that like that's okay, that the flaccid penis is beautiful. And again, if it has attachment issues, knowing it's okay for me to be me.
Yeah, and you can still have...
Every penis needs to feel that way.
You can still have intimacy and touch and feel close.
Closeness,
it's kissing, really, love. Yeah, like a lot of people think of sex as just the mechanics of inserting.
A, B, C,
like,
D, do these things.
I gotta say, the best sex I have is not when it's just that. It's like it's touch, it's kiss, it's
intimate,
romance,
it's long,
intimate, and it's beautiful.
It's connected.
Yeah, I very much promote sex as a creative process. Mm-hmm. And some people...
It's like painting a photo. Yeah,
again, you go back to the porn where you see them do this, 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 and this, and they finish with the usual kind of thing.
Right.
And it's really nice to go into a sexual situation with someone and say, well, what are you into? What do you want to do? And having that fun without having to do the same thing over and over again.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to be in that rut either.
Yeah. My partner and I, we have a really healthy, happy sex life. Mm-hmm. And we don't have that whole intercourse thing. Even, I don't know, but maybe half the time or less, maybe we really get more into oral, we get into mutual stuff, we get into role play. It's so much fun, and it's hard to do it all in one session, so you just have to keep doing, keep it up. Getting back
There's
together.
So many different things you can do.
Yeah, it's super
fun. You can't
fun.
Do it all in one day.
Yeah.
Or you'll be really tired.
Oh, yeah. I'm too old for that stuff now.
You're too old for that stuff.
Well,
back
but
in
I
the
think
day.
When people can really get into that experience sex, then they realize what they've been missing. I get a lot of couples in my office that have been doing performance sex for years. Mm. They feel like they've been in the status quo sort of thing with their sex life. And then suddenly, usually an affair happens, and then they come see me.
Yeah.
And then they realize, you know what? I haven't enjoyed all parts of my sexuality. I've been hindered. I've been held back. I feel alone, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's weird because infidelity has an odd way of creating this erotic energy and excitement between couples because you can no longer have that old marriage. You have to rebuild. Not even for marriage because people can be partners too. But like,
we were planning to talk about that today.
Yeah.
Is this one of the things that you cover in the book
that
you wrote?
Yeah, oh yeah, my book, Helping Couples Overcome Infidelity.
Since you brought it up, we might as well talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
So we were talking earlier, there's this this psychotherapist named Esther Perel.
Yep, and she also has a book on infidelity this year.
She also has a book on infidelity, and what she was talking about on the radio was actually how when people go through that affair, and then they come in and they work through it, and they make it through it, and they actually stay together, they have a new revitalized sex life. It's almost like they've risen a zombie from the dead.
Yeah. But people
Why
get
does
into
that
these
happen?
So what happens is the status quo. People get into these patterns, and there's certain things about our culture that are promoting these patterns. So one of them is our culture promotes workaholism and mamaholism or a parentaholism. I don't know what the good word for it is, but it's
Either
basically
way, it's a-holism.
Giving all of yourself to one thing and not leaving enough for yourself or anything else in life.
Giving too much.
Mm-hmm. And so what's happening in our society, at least in American culture, is you're seeing these extremes, and some people are trying to do both roles, and so they have nothing left for themselves.
Right.
So all they have left for their sex life.
60-hour work week.
60-hour work
hour
week, and then the rest is to kids, nothing for themselves. They're exhausted. They get into this status quo. I call it dying inside, but there's this time that they basically... No, this is a very real thing.
No, I call it that too, but that's the clinical term.
That is the clinical phrase that I use that everybody, when they hear it, they're like, yeah, that's how I felt. They feel dead.
Because they lose themselves.
Because they basically are going through the motions in the relationship. They've lost them.
And they've lost their joys other than they still have some happiness.
And it's not that kids and work can't be joyful.
No.
They are good things, but everything has to have a space.
Right. You
know?
Can't get everything from one facet of your life.
No.
You can't get everything from your partner. You can't get everything from your work.
You can't get everything from a hobby or a video game. You have to have variety.
Exactly.
It's the spice of life, I hear.
It is.
So anyhow, after they've died inside for a while, what happens is there's another person who's in the same boat. Their paths cross, and then they start to
try to like bump their partner and try to get them to be more involved.
You know what? They're too scared. Too scared to be honest with their partner. It's easier to be honest with a stranger
to say that
than
they're not
to tell
happy.
Their partner that they're unhappy. And so they keep up the status quo, and then they meet somebody else in the exact same boat, and they start sharing this darkness with each other. They commiserate. Mm. And then it's like they're woke. They're reborn and feeling this, and they're getting all these desires, and they feel like they matter.
They
feel like somebody else cares in a way their spouse has forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
But the hard thing is they never gave the spouse the opportunity to do anything about it. So then they come and see me because somebody finds out. Social media makes it very easy to very quickly find out about this.
Mm-hmm. So you know, everybody, none of your messages are secret.
Well, you know, it's funny. I had a documentary crew contact me asking me, is there anybody you know who has like a secret family? And I'm like, no, it's so rare for that to happen that I've never found it. I don't know. Have you ever found it? Has anybody been very good at that?
Usually it works best when the other family's in a different country.
Mm-hmm.
So you've seen it happen. Interesting. Yeah. But
it has happened.
I guess it happens, but it's harder to do it. So you can do it if you have somebody in another country.
Well, successfully for years. I know of two different situations, but I wouldn't want to give details.
No.
You would never need to. But like, the thing is that
especially
I see
if there's
it,
a language difference. Probably easier.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave her. She's going to keep their confidentiality. I understand.
No idea.
The
what
point
you're
is,
about.
Though, that like usually people find out, and then they come into my office, and then there's devastation, betrayal of trust. But the weird thing is it opens this door for them to be honest with each other finally, mm-hmm. and it does. It like sparks this new energy that's been lost, and they were both unhappy the entire time.
And they both can finally admit they were both unhappy because they've already burned the bridge down. You might as well be honest because you can stand in the ashes of it and at least be honest and walk away or possibly mend it.
What did you want to say? I saw you open your mouth.
I know that the divorce rate is still about 50%, but there are some people who think that infidelity is an instant deal breaker and that it can't be fixed. But there's a lot of other people who see it a different way and are able to repair and heal and
the majority of couples do work on it.
They do.
More work on it than do break up. There's research that backs that.
Because like something like 70% of couples deal with an infidelity of some sort.
It's actually, the newer number is between 60 to 80%. This is the hard thing. So like, I know it's high, but this is the weird thing about research. So people don't like to report their honest behaviors or they're not always aware of it. Like people can be very not self-aware. Mm-hmm.
So we're talking non-monogamy, but it's not ethical.
Not ethical non-monogamy.
Right. Well,
why don't you talk about that real quick? What would ethical non-monogamy be for those people who are listening and don't know what that means?
You in your clinical terms.
Well, she brought it up, it's important to me.
Yeah. Sure. Well, to me, ethical non-monogamy, it can take so many different forms. There's a whole big old Euler chart that is detailed that you can find online about different types of non-monogamy. The ethical kind is where you recognize that you are not innately monogamous by nature, which I think that some people can be monogamous successfully and happily. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of us, including me, I don't feel like I think my record. I was married monogamous for 7 years, which is wild to think about. But after I realized that that wasn't for me anymore, I don't know how long I could go without wanting to experience someone else intimately.
Yeah.
So I've chosen with my partner to be in an open relationship. So there's different forms of that. There's polyamory, which is multiple intimate loving relationships going on. And then there's more casual sort of approaches to it, but
like swinging or open marriages.
But as long as you're open and honest with everyone involved, then that's what's considered ethical. And
because everybody's agreeing to the terms.
It's so nice to have no secrets and to feel like you can leave your phone out and you don't have to worry about your partner checking it and seeing anything. You're an open book, and it's really a nice, comfortable feeling, but it's also exciting too because you get to have all that novelty and new experiences. And sometimes I'll be with someone and I have a bad experience, and it's nice to talk that out with my partner. And then sometimes I have a great thing or learn a new technique that I want to try, and then I get to bring it back to our bedroom and do that. And it's really fun, and it doesn't offend us to do that. You know, there's not any feeling of insecurity, and it's a nice place to be. And we've been together 10 years. And
that's awesome.
It's been good. Yeah.
Well, and I think a big part of this that's different between infidelity versus the honesty and the consent in the ethical non-monogamy, or what we are calling it in clinical world is consensual non-monogamy now, but they're pretty much the same thing. No, ethical, consensual, whatever, right?
Same thing.
I just got a book called, it's a really good book if you guys are interested. It's called The Therapist's Guide to Consensual Non-Monogamy, and she covers all these amazing scientific topics about it. But basically, they're sharing. You're sharing this. When it's an infidelity, it's secret. It's a betrayal. It's kept from a partner. And so a partner doesn't have any sense of control or any sense of say in the situation. And it's done to them.
And they also don't feel safe.
Against their will and non-consensually.
Right. And when your partner's lying to you, you're not going to feel safe in the relationship.
And anyway, even if it wasn't a consensual non-monogamy thing, anytime you're being dishonest, that's going to cause some harm.
Yeah.
But in consensual non-monogamy, what we see is there's these values of growth and a willingness to share. And even if you do have feelings, like that being is okay, and you share and you talk through it and support each other through it. Not like, oh, you're jealous. What's wrong with you?
Okay, so let's move on to the next topic, which is spontaneous desire versus responsive desire. What are those?
I learned about that concept through Emily Nagoski, who focuses a lot on female sexuality. And I came to a revelation recently that if 80-ish percent of men experience spontaneous desire, meaning that they get horny just kind of instantly and they can see something and get activated quickly.
Just visual stimuli.
Yeah, all kinds of things that will get that sparked. 20-ish percent of, so the majority do of men are spontaneous desire types. And with the responsive desire, a woman isn't walking around like that getting easily activated. However, when once she gets into a sexual erotic context, then she starts to get turned on. And it's so important to know what kind of person you are and know that it's not wrong to be one way or another. It's just good to know these things so that
it's
you
can
know
yourself.
Work with it. Yeah. And so my revelation is that I really do think that I've had, for most of my adult sexuality life, career, I feel like I experience a spontaneous desire, and I feel like I have
that's interesting.
Yeah, 80% don't. Right, it's about that 80-20 on both sides.
And it's interesting to me that I think that my libido is very similar to a man's. And what's, I've always wanted to know what my hormone levels were. So with my perimenopause that I'm going through now, I have been getting my hormones checked. And it turns out that I do have a higher level of testosterone than a woman of my age on average. And I have been supplementing with some estrogen and progesterone to balance things out. But it luckily has not affected my libido, because I really, 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 it's very important to me. But as I continue to go through the menopause process, I'm really curious to see how things shake out.
Yeah, do some women lose libido during menopause?
Some they can. And what my mentor, Joan Price, who teaches, her big specialty is ageless sexuality, so sex after 50. But what she teaches is applicable through all of our decades of life. She gave me reassurance that if you have a good sex drive before menopause, you'll maintain it. But if you let it go downhill and you are pretty dormant and you hit menopause, then it can go extinct.
Oh, no.
And that's something just to be aware of.
I've seen women who have that where they're like, I could just live the rest of my life without it.
Right.
So you say you're spontaneous in your desire. How does that take place? Like if you just see someone walk into the room and
that would be responsive. So responsive is in response to cues, right?
No. So spontaneous is when you feel horny or aroused before you get into a sexual situation. Yeah. So you're on the prowl.
So visual,
you're wanting to scratch that itch. And with the responsive, it takes a caress and a kiss and so on to get
some
you
sort
warmed
of
up and
so you have to work into
and
it.
To spark it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's not something like, and this is why men and women struggle a lot, because so many men have that spontaneous and they're expecting that of their female partners, which so many of them are more responsive. So like, how come you never initiate with me?
Yeah, because that's a very common complaint.
Women
it's
never
because
initiate,
of responsive desire. It's that women, and what women will do is they'll initiate affection, and sometimes men don't understand that that is them initiating sex, but that they are initiating the work to get into that sexual experience.
Like just a kiss or a hug.
Or a flirtation, or maybe even sending dirty sexting texts, you know.
Dirty sexting.
I know, I know. It's fun.
That's all part of the fun to get to that actual kind of part. But I
that's the clinical term.
It is.
I wake up aroused, and I have a little routine almost every day. I usually start off with an orgasm in the morning, and then I usually have one or two during the day just because of the work I do or whatever, you know, like the stuff that I do, my habits.
Yeah, that's some pretty high desire, though.
And then I usually have one at night as well. So the one in the morning is like a cup of coffee. It wakes me up.
And it's a great way to start your morning.
And the one at night is
the best
a nice
start of waking up.
Orgasm in your cup.
Yeah. A nice little stress relief at the end of the night. And so it's
I get it.
I'm spontaneous like that.
Yeah. I'm definitely responsive. I, you know, like that is, it's interesting because like, you know, hearing that, I'm like, nope, never had that. Nope, nope, nope. But the responsive definitely is very true to me, where I'm like, okay, let's work into something. Mm-hmm. Let's watch something sexy. Let's talk about something sexy. Let's look in the sex box and see what we can come up with.
Yeah, I'm definitely more spontaneous.
Oh, yes, you are. Like, when she described that, I was like, yeah, that's Josh. Every morning he's like, I've got to get some coffee. Coffee. That was in air quotes for those of you there, listening.
I'm definitely going to get some coffee.
Mutual coffee, consensually. Oh,
yeah. I'll give you some cream with your sugar.
Woo! That is so silly, Josh. We're not trying to embarrass you. We're totally flirt on this show all the time.
It's okay. It's a show about sex.
I know,
cream
I
and
know.
Sugar is the
I
least
like
of our
you.
Friends. Oh, I'm a fan as well. Oh,
good, I feel good, in the middle here.
Yeah. We like you, too.
Something's in between.
All right. Funny. Anyway, so that's really cool.
So, you wanted to talk about ED a little bit? So, a little bit?
We kind of covered that earlier, along okay. with rapid ejaculation.
Okay. So, is there anything you wanted to talk about? Joan Price? Like,
we talked about that a little bit, but if we're kind of going down a list, I would
who
like
is she?
To go back yeah. to.
Oh, okay.
You know what? Go back to something.
Go
that's
back.
Important to you.
Well, penis.
Okay.
Let's see.
You want to talk about a penis? Talk
us yeah. So you touched upon this.
She okay. touched a penis.
About how anxiety can be a real buzzkill for people, mm-hmm. and how it's the books I've been reading lately on ED and coping with rapid ejaculation issues is talking about different exercises you can do to promote relaxation for mm-hmm. a man so that he can get out of his head so much and be mm-hmm. more in the moment. So that is circling back to that topic. Moving over to Joan Price again, she is, I think, 74, 75 this mm-hmm. year, and she has been really making... One of the neat things that she created recently was a free webinar that you can see on YouTube, and it's mm-hmm. Safer Sex Practices for Seniors.
Oh, okay.
And it's really fun. She's got a nice little attitude with it, and I think Lucky Bloke is a condom company that she was working with, and she talks about not just condoms, but different types, different mm-hmm. ways to stay clean and dental dams and things like that. But she's so fun about how she does it. And everything that she does is just really rewarding for me. I always take something away from any time that I watch one of her things or read one of her books. She's got a really great perspective of that. And so that's why I consider her a mentor. And she did come to St. Louis before, and we got to hang out together, and it was really fun. And
well, that's awesome.
I think I wish I could be like her when I grow up. But
I really want to have somebody on here to talk about sex and seniors.
So. Oh, I have somebody. They're coming at the end of the month.
Oh, really?
Done. Done and double done.
Oh, you read my mind.
I knew it was about time to do a senior sex episode.
The reality is that as you get older, sex mm-hmm. is going to be a little
it
tougher
changes.
With some hip problems, yeah. back yeah. problems. You have to work well, around things.
And I want
to
put adapt. Out a theme. There's a theme of this show that's really important, not just contrast, but mm-hmm. it's actually
is
about
it
this getting out of your head thing.
Oh,
and
yeah?
it's for all of the ages. Mm. So even in senior times, sometimes your body doesn't work the same way it does. But like if you're into that performance sex, like we talked about, yeah. then it makes it harder for you to adjust in your senior years. And so when we talk about kind of getting out of your head, first of all, we actually are always in our brain to some degree. So I want to talk about what part we're talking about here. The head that we're talking about is the frontal cortex, where you're like thinking and you're discerning and you're kind mm-hmm. of getting lost and you're like thinking about this and
you
it's
analyze
like you're
things.
Analyzing yeah. and you're, you know, it's like you're doing your taxes while you're having
right.
sex.
You don't, that part doesn't really grow until you're a teenager.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
before that, you're more like animalistic.
So yeah. So what the part that we're talking about is your caveman brain, that mid, this part that's the fight. It's the same part that's actually the fight or flight, but it's basically
cerebral cortex.
Yeah, it's where you are like basically reacting based on instinct mm-hmm. a little bit more and less on, is this right? What's going on here? Why is this happening? Am I doing this right? Like that's that analytical mm-hmm. part of your brain that
right.
honestly, I kind of call it the cobwebs part of the brain.
Well, actually,
there's
like,
two sides.
And the other side is the what is it called?
Amygdala.
The amygdala mm-hmm. is actually where it doesn't actually send signals to the rest of your brain mm-hmm. because that is where the fight or flight response takes place mm-hmm. and it has to be able to respond faster than you can think.
Uh-huh.
So when something happens, like a gunshot goes off, your mm-hmm. body has to be able to respond to that threat before you can take the time to consider what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's hard to control
So that part. To put this into perspective, it's the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. Yeah. The sympathetic nervous system is your fight or flight. I know, I love the science of this. So that's your fight or flight, but your parasympathetic nervous system is the relaxing part. That part that we're talking about where it's like, so when you're in fight or flight alone, no, you're not going to have your best sex. It's actually when you're in the relaxed place, but it's still a similar part of your brain where you're going through the motions, you're allowing yourself to let go, you're relaxing, and but you are kind of letting your body lead you a little bit more and less of this part that's like, what am I doing? Is this okay? Mm-hmm. So essentially, you're allowing your nervous system to guide you, but the part that's the relaxing side.
Right.
If that makes it any clearer.
So when you're talking about adjusting things and changing things up as you get older, it doesn't mean you're broken. It means that things just need to shift and change, and that's totally fine. Yeah. One of Joan's big takeaways that I really appreciate, when I was first with my partner, we would get together and we would have sex, and then we would have dinner, and then we'd have sex again. Mm-hmm. And now we know that I get really tired after 8 o'clock.
That's
And also, when you eat, the food
makes you feel heavy.
And the blood flow goes to digesting instead of your genitals, and that's something Joan taught me. So we always do the sexy time first, so that we don't lose out later, because I really enjoy that. It makes me feel connected, and to miss out on that is not ideal. So
I encourage couples to have sex before their dates for that very reason.
Savage has that same rule. He's a famous podcaster with Savage Love Cast.
We've definitely heard him.
He talks about F first before you go to your Valentine's dinner, so you don't call him the next day complaining that we went on this nice date and then I didn't get any.
But that makes sense. I didn't even think about that, but it's like your body is going completely to food digestion. Right. So, and a lot of my couples will say, oh, we're too full. We don't feel like sometimes have sex before you exercise rather than after. Cause I do yoga. And so sometimes my hips are like sore at the end of it. And I'm like, I just can't have you do more hip work, honey.
No, I had to make the rule. I was like, if we're going to have sex, you need to like make an appointment so that I can know before I get into the yoga.
Yeah, just kind of let him know.
Cause we'll do like 40 minutes of yoga and then I'm exhausted. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, you want me to do more push-ups, woman?
Well, but what that's funny you mentioned an appointment too, because a lot of couples don't know that that's like a part of sex, that it's okay to plan ahead.
Well, some people don't even talk about sex, so it's hard to schedule it.
I'm a big fan of quality time, and that's why my partner and I choose not to live together. People who live together, I salute you. But that way, when we're together, we know that we're carving out quality time for each other, and it works for us. So
that's good. Yeah. It's about you and him.
Yeah.
Well, and for people who are living together, I think they forget about that. That like, because you see each other, you feel like, I see you all the time. Why do I, what's the difference? And
like, I was ignoring you watching Netflix all night. What are you talking about?
Exactly. No, Josh, that's the perfect example, is that like, just because you're in the same room doesn't mean you're having quality time. Just because you're both raising a child in this moment doesn't mean you're having quality time. Quality time to me is without phones, sometimes without TV or any sort of stimuli at all. Often without children. Often. I'll be fair, like, because you know, I mean, we want our alone time,
definitely to That's recharge awesome. And take care of ourselves so we can take care of our people who need us.
Exactly.
That's so really cool.
What is dark creative sex and what is light creative sex?
Oh yeah, I was interested in this topic.
So most people stay within the vanilla zone of sex, which is the typical
missionary position.
I don't know how to describe it, but vanilla is just, you know, the basics. And it takes some courage for some people to get into the dark side of creative sexuality, which is BDSM. And that's the stuff that is kind of working with your shadow side. It's working with pain and power exchange. And on the flip side, Tantra is the light side of this creative sexuality. And what's interesting about both is that both require surrender. And I learned about the neat dance and ways of incorporating BDSM and Tantra into my sex routine with Barbara Corellis. She wrote the book Urban Tantra and teaches it. And I was able to train with her up in New York I guess it's been over a year ago now, and I've been able to learn about Tantra through that. And I think it's so awesome how she pointed that out, that in our society, we're supposed to be very brave and strong and work really hard, mm-hmm. that whole workaholic thing. But
yeah,
it's hard for us to surrender and let go and
be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Great word. Yeah. So
I love vulnerability.
And it's nice to have somebody there with you to help. You can do some of these things solo, but it's so nice to have energy exchange with it and to have someone be supportive as you explore these things. And it's very important to have time afterwards to process for both.
So for BDSM, could you give somebody an example of like something they could do as role playing, like? What's a game they could play in bed to get into that?
Oh, gosh. Let's see here. So BDSM is very different than abuse because abuse is non-consensual and BDSM is consensual. And you can incorporate pain in BDSM or you can make it a sensual scene. So what's nice about if you're doing BDSM in a healthy way, you negotiate a scene and you will talk about, what do you feel like tonight? What do you want to do? And for example, I like being spanked and I like being warmed up. I like a specific way of doing things. And so I communicate that as opposed to just all of a sudden getting spanked really hard. I like the warm up of it.
And you want it a little lighter at first.
Yeah. Warm up and just having that as the focus of our scene for that time and talk about if sex will be involved or not involved and
or even intimacy too. You know, like there's some people who like a combination of both the spanking and pain, but then like the touch and the pleasure and the kissing and the caressing.
Or some people they can be combined. Disconnected where they want it to be that withholding of intimacy and then they bring it in at the end.
It can be very cathartic and that's what I point out, especially after the scene is over, to have that time for aftercare. We learned that the hard way one time when my partner stopped by on his way to work over lunch hour and he worked me over in this really intense way and then he went off to work and I was left in the fetal position for the rest of the afternoon because we didn't know. And then we were, and then when he checked in on me after work, I was like, oh my God, I'm just really rattled. That was really intense. We didn't know. So now we know to allow time for the aftercare.
The aftercare,
I think even sex needs that kind of aftercare. Like whether it's in the BDSM or not, like I kind of call it like the cuddling or that. It's like just this connection phase where you feel close and loved. Yeah.
Oh, totally. I know that with some people who utilize sex workers, they will go, they think that they're going to get off and have a sexual experience, but they're going for lots of reasons. It's not just that. And I think some people, if they focus on the sex, they might go and see a sex worker and get off and then leave right away. And other people will make that part of the process, but allow time afterwards for pillow talk and intimacy. And one thing I thought would be very interesting to do, which I haven't started really doing yet, is I have intimacy with lots of different people on a regular basis. And I think it'd be so interesting to record, not audio record, but just things people talk about right after they've had sex.
Write it down.
And some things pop out of your head that is totally not just like, oh, that was so good, but something like,
Trump.
What? I really miss my dog. You know, like, something that brings, opens them up to vulnerability that they can kind of,
It has nothing to do with sex. It's more of an intimate thing, though, that they haven't talked about yet.
Maybe. And it can be a painful thing or it can be a healing thing. It can be kind of a breakthrough moment. So it's pretty, I think that's pretty special to think about that.
That's awesome. So on the contrast side, on the Tantra, what's a play thing that they could do with that?
I would definitely recommend, there's many different teachers of Tantra, but the one I know is Barbara Corellis's Urban Tantra. I would recommend getting a book or looking online, maybe a YouTube, just to get an experience. But what's weird about Tantra to me is that you can read a book or you can know what it is, but until you immerse yourself in it, it's really hard to comprehend.
I'm having trouble understanding it.
He keeps asking about it. He's like, what is this Tantra thing?
What is it?
Well, I'm hoping that
it sounds like it's a lot of mindful techniques, like a lot of body. Touch.
It's trying to get you in your body and less in your head. We heard that from Leanna. But Yuko, sorry, we don't mean to talk.
Sorry, about yeah. So we are hoping Sex Positive St. Louis to host a tantra event with Goddess Leanna sometime in June. We're trying to nail down the details, but stay tuned for that. You can check the calendar and see when that's been posted. So for tantra, okay, so you can read the book. And I've read Urban Tantra twice.
Urban Tantra, yeah.
And then when I went to the actual workshop for a week, that's when it really clicked for me. And Barbara taught us how to do a solo tantra. And the word tantra, I'm sure it has many meanings, but one of them is to weave. So it's kind of like weaving your energies together and becoming closer because of that. And there's a lot of breathing involved. And so you can do it solo. And it can be a really good practice, just like meditating or yoga, something like that. But I like it best when you're with somebody. And since I've learned a certain technique, I do these tantra awakening rituals that are hard to explain, but it's in the book. And it involves a massage table and me tending to a body. No, this sounds weird, but there are people who help prepare people for childbirth, and there are like doulas and midwives.
We've had one on here.
Oh, good, good. And then there's also people who prepare people for burial, for the death process. And to me, it's like I'm tending to a really sacred person. Each person is so important, and it's so present, and you are in the moment. And I'm tending to that body, but not preparing it for death, but it's a living body, and I'm just pouring this love onto it, and there's this breathing going on, and I have felt electricity exchange between us as I'm doing this, and it's incredible. And for some people, the whole tantra ritual, I like to allow 2 hours because I like to have a half hour at the beginning to just get acclimated, even have tea together, and then have that hour of immersion into the real experience, and then have a half hour afterwards to decompress, process, and not just throw someone out the door after they've had that.
You're after an intimate.
So some people have a real pleasurable experience. Some people will find it very healing and cathartic and have a lot of breakthrough with their psyche cracking open and crying and things, which is all normal and natural.
And it's so about creating a supportive space for it.
Yes. And it's just, I take it so, I think sex should be really fun and playful, but I do take this seriously because I find it to be really sacred and a real honor to each person's, like I keep mentioning, whenever I do this, I just look at someone's body and they're all so beautiful and they're all such a beautiful landscape. And I just get so much pleasure out of, like, it's a real give and give. It's not just me giving.
You giving to them makes you get something out of it.
It's definitely, it feels like a circle of energy that is just something. Woo.
There's a lot of love going back and forth.
And so when Leanna does this tantra thing, she has different techniques. And we'll see what that, I'm excited to learn from her as well. She's been experienced with it for over 12 years. And I've just been playing around with it for a couple of years.
Yeah,
I want to talk just a little bit about that because I've been reading this consensual non-monogamy book that's covering that love that you're describing. So a lot of us have been raised in what we call a love deficit model, which basically means that there's only so much love to give. If you ever watched the Boss Baby movie, he has this beautiful imagery where he has this toy and he goes, "There's only so much to give, and it's all coming to me. Oh no, there's nothing left for
this
Timothy.
This is for your mom. This is for dad, and we're all out.
Oh, sorry, we're all out of love." And it was perfect because I think a lot of people approach love and romance and sex like this. Like there's
like
only so much, like a currency, like there's only so much to give. But what you're describing is a love flowing, that there's love can grow and that you're capable of giving love to multiple people and sharing love, and that it's something that can grow. And it's not something that suddenly is going to be gone.
It's more like a virus. You're infecting
you're
them
spreading
with love.
People with love. Face. She's like, well, okay. No. He always has to go to the dark side of it. Well, I love you.
It's the truth.
What are you going to say,
Kendra? One of my friends who's polyamorous compared it to, she said that love is not a bathtub. It's more like an ocean.
Yeah.
And a bathtub, only two people can fit in the bathtub, but mm-hmm. in an ocean, there's plenty of room for all kinds of mm-hmm. flow.
Yeah.
Well, and if you even think about your children, like if that were the real scenario, then mm-hmm. okay, you only have so much love to give. So, now I have two children. I'm only giving half of my love to each of you. Oh, now I have three children. I'm only going to give thirds.
Now you're really not loving any of them.
What I'm saying is, no, when people say they have another child, there's plenty of love to give. There's mm-hmm. more love. They love them both, and they love them both in their own special ways. It's love is not a deficit. There's plenty of love to give. And I think a lot of it comes from that, is that ability to be vulnerable and give mm-hmm. everything of yourself. So mm-hmm. I don't know. That was me being really spiritual and crazy. Yeah. Sorry, guys.
You're a very spiritual person.
I'm very passionate this week.
I'm Angela.
You have lots of feelings.
I have feelings.
I feel so much.
Love.
Me too.
Oh, I do. It's been a good week.
I'm glad.
You have so much emotion. But you have so much to share.
I do. I do. I feel that way about my clients, you know? I feel love for them because they're being vulnerable with me. They're sharing deep parts of themselves.
Yeah, you deal with very intimate moments, both good and bad, with a lot of clients.
And I have this belief that most people really love each other and want to do good to one another. I think sometimes people just get into negative cycles and they don't realize how they're hurting one another. Yeah. And when I approach people like that, it's amazing the changes I can create in them.
Yeah.
Mm. So anyhow... I think we're about, is that about an hour?
That is about it, yeah.
Oh, why don't we do some plugs? What do you want to plug finally for
people find you? Yeah,
I would just like people in the St. Louis area to check out sexstl.com and see what that's all about, and definitely try to attend some of those events if you're curious about meeting like-minded people in that sort of range. And then I also have my personal blog, thebeautifulkind.com, where I share personal stories and all kinds of information. I do consulting, but if people can't afford that or don't have the time or whatever, they can go to my website. I have a lot of free resources on there and a lot of naughty pictures.
Well, definitely go.
I really am pro nudity, and
I'm a fan.
I think that
body positivity, right?
I don't think certain parts of our body should be taboo or off limits necessarily, but of course it's up to people to do it on their own terms. So I just let it all hang out there because there's nothing that people can do to like, I've already done it already to myself, so no one can out me in any way anymore. And so that's part of that whole journey I went on. So then,
you're very public about who you are.
Yeah, and with my little professional site is beopenedandhonest.com, and I do those little consultations and that kind of work there. And I get on the Twitter and all that stuff, but that's all linked on the beautifulkind.com website.
And do you have any events coming out up you want to?
I am just back from out of town for a couple trips, so I need to regroup a little bit. I am doing a really important private sex worker meeting soon with some of my colleagues because there's some real concern lately with some internet. There's starting to censor things on the internet a lot more, especially when it comes to sex topics. Like, they shut down the Craigslist personals and they've shut down any sort of sex worker forums on Reddit. They have really updated lots
of
policies.
They passed some sort of law in Congress that meant that they could be held accountable for crimes committed on their website, even if they had nothing to do with it.
Right. Wow. So it really is a lot, insidious. Like,
and it's Craigslist is they don't want to be held accountable for
it. And they're using an excuse that we're trying to cut down on sex trafficking.
They are. But which was a problem. And Craigslist actually shut down their adult section because of it. They didn't wait for somebody to pass a law on that. They did want to protect kids. They don't and people who are being forced into it. So
So anyway, so I think there's a lot of panic and alarm and fear going on in certain industries, and so I want to address that with. I think it's really important to support each other and and help each other. I don't know. I just kind of babbling a little bit, but stay tuned for more events because we will be adding some more. I have so many on my list to do, and I definitely need to be in town for it. But my next trip is later this month, going to Seattle with Betty Martin's Wheel of Consent workshop. That'll be my next continuing education
the
kind
Wheel
of thing.
Of consent.
Awesome. Yeah, and then I'll bring that consent stuff
back. Awesome. And then, of course, if you want to see me as a therapist, it's www.therapistinst.com. I do have my book out now. It's called Helping Couples Overcome Infidelity. It's out on Amazon if you want to get it. And then I actually have a kink webinar, a kink and poly webinar for, you can go to aamft.org and look at their continuing education credits. I'm doing a webinar tomorrow for them on an advanced look at polyamory and kink lifestyles. But honestly, you know, if I would rechange, I would actually, it's really about consensual non-monogamy and all the different forms of it. But yeah, I'm covering different skills that therapists need to really work well with people who are consensually non-monogamous to help people kind of explore their emotions and understand consent a little better and even understand the way that they might affect clients when they're working with them based on their own values. So sounds that's good. What's going on for me.
Sounds fun. So this has been the About Sex podcast, and we've been talking with Kendra.
Kendra Holliday.
Kendra Holliday.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Yeah. Be sure to add us on Facebook, review us on iTunes, and send us your questions to aboutsexpodcast@gmail.com. I'm Joshua Skirtu.
And I'm Angela Skirtu. Stay kinky, St. Louis.